to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program. We are going to be coming your way Saturdays, 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, streaming live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We are also rebroadcast on A2Zen.fm. Check their listings for when our program is broadcast, because it's broadcast at different times throughout the week. So we encourage you to check that out as well. And we also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. So lots of opportunities for you to check out our guests, the information that they have to offer, and we hope that you will do that. Sort of a little update on things that are happening with the radio program. 2014, an extraordinary year for us in that we are featuring each month a special series of interviews throughout the year dealing with mythology and its role in our lives. I think you're really going to enjoy it. We hope that you will join us. Check the website for the specific dates and the time, of course, as well as where they'll be. They'll be archived, just like all of the other programs. And I will have as sort of a guest co-host. His name is Will Lynn, and he and I met some time ago. He is studying, actually getting his PhD in mythology, if you will. And we had the opportunity to talk about Prometheus, the god of new paradigms. It should be an interesting series of programs throughout 2014, so I hope that you will join us. Also, if you'd like to become a part of what we're doing here, if you'd like to share in the work that we're doing, we are always looking for support for this program. All you have to do is go to the mission page, and there are a couple of methods by which you can support us through a link to PayPal or GoFundMe. I'm getting some emails from them. A lot of folks are raking in the dollars for their particular causes. And if you can help us and support us in that way, we are greatly appreciated. With that said, we are going to jump into an interview today with a guest we've had on before. And it was an extraordinary time of conversation then. And I think it will be just as interesting today. Joanne DiMaggio is my guest, and her latest book is Your Soul Remembers, Accessing Your Past Lives Through Soul Writing. Now, when she was on the program last time, she had just completed, I think it was, Joanne, I think it was your first work having to do also with soul writing. And I had it right in front of me just a moment ago. There it is. Soul writing, conversing with your higher self. And first of all, thanks so much for joining us again.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm really glad to be back, Richard.
And I bet you since the last time we've talked, either A, you've gone through a lot of lead ink, or you have had to refill your computer's cartridge numerous times as you type into the computer. I always joke about that more ink is used in typing and word processing programs than is printed on the printed page from your printer. And you got to make sure to keep that ink well filled inside the computer. I have to say, and I think I shared this with you when we were together the last time, that when I was 21, I was given a blank book. Never had one before. Had thought about journaling. Didn't know what the heck I was going to put in the journal. And so on my 21st birthday, among other things, I was given one of these blank books. And it was sort of gold embossed, and it was really kind of nice. And there were no lines. So I could have drawn in it for that. Matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, I did occasionally. Kept a couple of physical material keepsakes in it, pressed in the book. And then I went out and bought additional books and probably wrote for, I don't know, maybe 2, 3, 4 years and then stopped. And really haven't done anything since. But what is intriguing to me about your latest book in terms of dealing with past lives, from my understanding, and I want you to elaborate on this, when we start delving into that realm, if we're open to doing so, it's opening up, so to speak, more of a doorway than just a window into an understanding of self that really makes a lot more sense to us. And maybe also helps us to continue to formulate maybe the direction that we want to go.
Exactly. Right. Right. It's going really down to the root cause of whatever issues that you're working on right now. And sometimes it doesn't necessarily have to be something that you're having difficulty with. It could be the origin of some talents and abilities that you've brought in with you. So a lot of people come because they have a specific issue, but for the purpose of my research project that the book grew out of, I wanted them to go to the past life that was most impacting them in the here and now. And so they all had a preconceived notion, or at least most of them had a preconceived notion of what was going to happen, and absolutely none of them went to where they thought they were going. So it was really quite a fascinating experience for both them and for me. And many of them had just tremendous aha moments, especially when they were able to link something that happened in the past to what was going on with them in the here and now. And it was tremendously healing for many, many of them.
I want us to delve into that research project that led to this latest work.
Sure.
Some skeptics would say that a lot of the information that supposed past life, we'll call them regressees, those who are regressed, they're not really memories of past lives, but it's their imagination run amok, or it's, oh, you saw this from a television show or a movie somewhere, and you're just not remembering and connecting it with what have you.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's not real.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that you know about reincarnation especially through the research project that confirms for you, as well as the participants, and that's also sort of a sidebar question, I don't want to throw too much at you at once,
mm-hmm.
That reincarnation, that we actually, truly, genuinely, honestly have lived one or more lives in the past?
That is the most common question that I get, and nearly everyone that participated in my project asked that same identical question. Did I make this up? Was this really real? There's a couple of things that happened that I'd like to point out. One, none of them would have gone to the lifetime or created the story that they created if left to their own devices. Many of them said, well, I believe I had a past life in Atlantis. Now, if you're going to make something up and you've already got that in your head, when I do the regression with you, you're going to come up with some wild story about Atlantis. That never happened. The other thing that happened is a lot of them had great emotion when they were experiencing the regression, the previous lifetime. You can't make that up. When you are in an altered state of consciousness, you can't just arbitrarily say, well, I'm going to start to cry now, or I'm going to start to laugh hysterically now for no apparent reason. So that was another flag that said that this was real. And also, a lot of them were able to do some research when they, after the session, to see if the places that they saw were real. Some of them, I had one who went to a place called Weston, and he's in Texas, and he said, "I've never been to Texas. I don't know anything about this place." And when he looked it up, there were elements of it that he was able to research that were identical to what he saw. That happened to several people. One woman went to a monastery, she said, in Tuscany, and she was able to find that. Another one talked about her family dying in a plague in England in a certain time period, and later on we researched that and found out that that was true. But I think that regardless of whether this is something you believe in or not, there's value to it. And if what they get out of it is some sort of understanding of their present life situation, then there's tremendous value in that, I think, and I think that they would say that as well, because every one of them afterwards said that this greatly transformed their understanding of their life, the relationship with people, and dealing with some of the hard issues that some of them had on their plate at this moment in time.
And I will say that I would never certainly challenge my mother on any facts pertaining to my upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
However, there is a difference of opinion, if you will, as to whether or not she gave myself and my brother and sisters on a daily basis on school days a spoonful of cod liver oil. Now, I vividly remember that. Mm-hmm. I remember how it tasted. But she says, no, I never did that. I didn't consider it to be something cruel. I mean, I look back on all of her efforts as a way of helping us, helping to keep us healthy and well and our bodies running well as little kids and so forth. So I know that there are those who would say that if, in spite of what you've just stated, that, okay, this is helpful. I mean, these people, they come out. And by the way, are they under some form of hypnosis?
Right. With regressions, we use guided meditation, which is basically a hypnotic session.
And okay, I'm gonna get a little more specific here before I jump back to my other point. Guided meditation. In what way is it guided, so as to stay neutral to the experience that the participant is going to have and doesn't influence it?
Sure, absolutely. What I tell them to do is I guide them in that I take them, I give them some imagery to work with. So when we get into a really relaxed state where I know that they're very deeply centered and that their body is totally relaxed, but their mind is awake and alert, I give them the suggestion that they walk up a staircase, a very long staircase, to a door at the top, open the door, and when they walk into the door, they're in the lobby of a very old historic hotel. And once in that lobby, there are doors on either side of them, and each door has, instead of a room number, it has a year on it. And I tell them that each of those doors represents one of their past lives, and that their soul remembers their soul remembers all of their lifetimes, but the instructions are that let your soul lead you to the door leading to the lifetime that is most impacting you in the here and now. Then I am quiet. And they themselves picture themselves walking down this hallway with these doors on either side of them, each one with a year on it, beginning with the year of their birth in this life. That's the door closest to them, and then the years start to descend after that.
Mm-hmm.
They walk alone in their mind's eye down that hallway, and I tell them, you know, have your soul stop you in front of the door that's leading to the lifetime that's most impacting you. And I'm quiet while they do that, and when they say, okay, I'm there, then I instruct them to open the door, walk through the door, and then they are then in a living representation of their past life. At this point, I don't know what year is on the door. I don't know when they open the door, what they saw. What I do then is just to try to help them by asking specific questions about what are you wearing, are you inside, are you outside, describe the landscape, just the typical regression questions follow that. And then I say to them, after we establish where they are and who they are, let your soul scan that lifetime and select an incident, something of significance, something that made an imprint on your soul. This is the root cause of whatever you're dealing with now. And then I wait for them. And then they simply give me the narrative of what it is that they're experiencing. And so it's not me telling them, you are in Greece and it's 1305 AD. It's them telling that to me. And so I'm simply the guide in terms of watching the time, making sure that they're okay, monitoring them as they're doing this, and asking questions like a journalist would ask, and if they get stuck, what happens next, and just kind of keep it moving. And then after they tell me their significant event, then we go through the death scene, and then I ask the significant questions, was there anything left unfinished, anything you regretted, were there any people in that life that are in your life now, and if so, what role are they playing? And then when that was all done, that's when we started to do the soul writing to see if we could get some additional information. So in terms of guiding, that's basically how that was handled.
Well, for me, it's very interesting, and I'm sensing there is somebody listening who is the skeptic who is saying, okay, this is all just a bunch of hokum, and they're coming from their particular belief system, with their, which they're certainly welcome to, and I, there's no judgment there. We all have them. And I'm actually a little bit of a skeptic from the standpoint that I used to tell people that, look, reincarnation's real. When a baby comes through the womb and has a little pebble in its fist, and we carbon date it, and it is hundreds of years old. Where did that kid get that stone? Now, we could come up with all kinds of rational, what we might say rational, explanations as to how that wound up in there. Maybe the mother was visiting someplace and happened to accidentally ingest, and on and on. I mean, we could go down that particular path. But I would say that that's pretty good evidence from my perspective. This kid lived somewhere, sometime, and somehow managed to materialize and bring through this thing. By the same token, we used to believe the earth was flat. There was no way that man could fly. I kind of still believe that man shouldn't be flying. He wasn't designed to fly, and this should remain on the ground, safer that way. Be that as it may, reincarnation is, I'm going to say, it's a reality to many people. Obviously, it's these 50 people that you've worked with and hundreds of thousands around the world, if not millions around the world, accept it as a given. And it also helps to explain and give credence to the ways in which we are, in terms of our temperaments and our personalities and so on and so forth. I've even talked with people in regards to the characteristics of, let's say, an infant or a young toddler, what have you, and you hear the phrases, oh, he has Aunt Mary's smile, or he has Uncle Bill's temper, or he has Aunt Jean's eyes, or so-and-so's nose, and on and on and on. And I thought, okay, well, if you can pass on those traits, why couldn't you pass on mental as well as spiritual traits, even if it is, and in manner of speaking, isn't that, I'm not going to call that reincarnation, but it's sort of pseudo, if you will, because those kinds of, and I know it's totally different, but those are kind of traits that are passed down through the genes, through the DNA, that information, that code, that we pass on from, you know, father to son to grandson and so forth. Mm-hmm. That's something a little different, but I still think that there is a certain level of validity even in that. But I wanted to go back to the other aspect, and that is, let's just take these 50 individuals. Mm-hmm. How many of them said, oh, I was Cleopatra?
No.
Or they, it seems like most people who really tout this claim that they were always these big names in history. Well, who were the peasants? Who were the serfs? Who were the slaves?
Well, yeah, the majority of people who have regressions just go to an average John Doe life.
Yeah.
However, there were people who were Cleopatra and Julius Caesar and Thomas Jefferson and, you know, Benjamin Franklin and all the famous people. They all had souls too, and those souls come back as well. Edgar Casey, I'm a big student of Edgar Casey, and
I've read a great number of his works, yes.
He had many, many people visit him, and he would do a life reading for them and usually would give them about four of their previous lifetimes. And, you know, Casey was very adamantly opposed to this in the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't really want to go there.
No.
You know, he was teaching Sunday school. He read the Bible for every year of his life. And so when this information started to come through, he just was taken aback by it. And
he wanted nothing to do with it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if you read some of the life readings of the many people who came to see him, many of whom came to him because they had health issues, because he is the father of holistic medicine. That was what he was doing at first. He was doing health readings. And when suddenly these life readings came, like, where is the source? Where does this start? What was the beginning of this? And then, you know, he would tie in all of a sudden these past lives. he had a lot of famous people, and that's one of the major criticisms of Casey and the ARE is, you know, why are there so many famous past lives of people that he met? Well, it was because of the time and because he was famous, and if you had something wrong with you and you could, you knew that there was this man who could lie down and seemingly go to sleep and contact a source and get information for you, you would flock to Virginia Beach just like anybody else.
Yeah.
And so he did have quite a few of those. I know some people who have had famous past lives, and it is not something that they would wish on anybody. Because let's face it, how do you top that? You know, if you were told, Edgar Casey told, gave a life reading for a baby who was 3 days old and said that he had been the reincarnation of Thomas Jefferson and Alexander the Great. Well, you know, how if you grew up knowing that, what that would be a tremendous burden.
Yeah,
it is not a blessing. People who have had fame, who actually did have a famous past life, have gone to it very, very reluctantly, not wanting to have to take that on. So it's a lot easier to be a John Doe, and most of the people that I have done regressions on over the years are just ordinary folk like you and I. I did have one in my session this time around who went to the court of Henry VIII, and but was not Henry VIII,
mm-hmm.
but was in that time period. So that was about as close as I got to a famous past life among these 50 that I did for this particular project.
And the other thing, too, is it's only from my, I mean, I could be wrong, but in this time frame, only one person could have been the reincarnation of each one of these individuals. You couldn't have two people in this life, at least unless, of course, Cleopatra or Henry VIII were schizophrenic.
Well, you know, I've been studying that, Richard, because there are people who come up with these theories about strands that come out from a soul in which, you know, there's multiple strands and then you know, people pick up on those. That's why, you know, I live in Charlottesville, so there's Virginia and the home of Thomas Jefferson, and we have several Thomas Jeffersons floating around here.
Ah.
And I've heard multiples, I mean, ARE has stories about multiple of Marie Antoinette, and, you know, it just goes like that. Some people mistakenly think that there's somebody famous because perhaps they may have lived in that time period and may have been familiar with them or admired them and just sort of thought that they should just take on that persona, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they actually were them. I tell some people, I said, if you think you were Napoleon, when you are revisiting that life, are you sitting on a horse looking out around people so you're seeing that life through those eyes, or are you in the crowd seeing him from afar and thinking that's who you were? So it's not common. It doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You can talk to most past life therapists, and they'll tell you that they don't, that it doesn't happen very often.
Or were you the horse?
Or were you the horse? No.
I mean, I don't know.
No, I don't think so.
Well, but, anyway. But here's the thing that we're going to be talking about in this program, of course, is having to do with the latest book that you have out now dealing with past lives and mm-hmm. and soul writing, if you will. I'm assuming that that's still what you're referring to it as.
Exactly.
In terms of... is it absolutely essential for an individual who, let's just say, who's listening, says, "Well, I'll go out and I'm going to go buy, I'll go buy her book, and then I'll go out and I'll buy a blank book, a journal, what have you, and I'm going to start writing. But where do I start?" And with that, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with the answer to that question.
Okay.
We're talking with Joanne DiMaggio, and her latest work happens to be entitled Your Soul Remembers, Accessing Your Past Lives Through Soul Writing. I'm Richard Dugan, and this is Tell Me Your Story. Stay right where you are.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we are talking with Joanne DiMaggio and her latest work, Your Soul Remembers, having to do with accessing your past lives through soul writing. And before we get into the step-by-step process, which part of me thinks that it probably might be better if the individual were, say, maybe they're in Virginia with you. But it sounds to me like it is possible for each one of us right where we are to safely and securely begin this kind of a process. Mm-hmm. Before we get into that, let me ask you how people can get a hold of you and or a copy of your book. I know you have a website. And also some other information. So share with us how they can do that.
Okay. My website is www.soulwriter.net. And they could get all the information on that website.
All right. Very good. So the steps that we are talking about in regard to beginning the process, I'm curious as to the kind of, shall we say, longing, if you will, an individual might be having that would precipitate the need to begin this kind of exercise in soul writing to get in touch with these past life experiences that, as you have stated in the research project, are the life that is impacting you most in your present life. Is that the right phraseology?
Right.
Okay.
That's right.
So where does a person's, soul or mental, what place do they need to be in? If they're going through their lives and they're feeling fine and everything's great, is this really something that they need to be pursuing?
Well, you know, this project came out of the first book, when the first book was about what is soul writing. Soul mm-hmm. writing is a written form of meditation. So, and in that book, I talked about it's really a process, and it's the same process that many famous writers and composers have used to tap into the higher power, into a divine source of inspiration. So it's actually writing in an altered state of consciousness.
And it's different from, I had the phrase in my head just a second ago, automatic writing. It's different from automatic writing how?
It is absolutely different from automatic writing, because automatic writing, you're getting information from an outside source, and there's a whole series of differences between the two that I'd outlined in the first book.
Okay.
The fact that you use a prayer protection, you surround yourself with white light, your handwriting is virtually the same as what it is when you are in a conscious state in writing, and this information is coming from a divine source, so you're tapping into a higher power, whether it's God, whether it's your angels, your ascended masters, your spirit guides, whoever you believe that you are in touch with that is giving you some guidance from above. And that guidance is coming in through you, through your soul, and then out your hand, out your arm, and through your hand and on the written paper. So people who meditate, this is the same identical process that they use. The only difference is that this takes it a step further, and the information that they're getting while they're meditating, this process puts it out on paper. So when I did my first book, I outlined all the different ways that you can apply this process of soul writing to your life. And past life happened to be one of them, only because it had impacted me in such a great way. And I stumbled onto it quite accidentally. And as a past life therapist and somebody who was pursuing soul writing as a passion, I wondered how I could combine them. And I thought, well, if I can get information on my past life without going through a regression, couldn't somebody else? So that was the whole basis of this particular project. It was taking a chapter out of that first book, which was focused on past lives, which I told people how I happened to stumble on it, and then thinking to myself, I wonder if I could prove that other people could do it too. So I had the volunteers come in. So really the emphasis of the project wasn't so much about the past life regression as it was about the writing, because it was the writing after the regression that was the most powerful. I mean, I had a spontaneous healing come out of that. I had soul groups come forward that that really surprised me, meaning that these were people who were describing the same time period and the same circumstances as the other two people, or three of them. So it was each of them describing it separately, and none of them knowing each other, but saying basically the same thing. So it had a lot of surprises to it. But the writing part of it was really, really the most powerful, and that's what I wanted to prove, that anybody could do this. Anybody could enter an altered state of consciousness through meditation, ask a question if you want, or just something generic about, what lifetime is impacting me now, and just put the pen on the paper, wait for the answer, and through this process, the information would come forward.
And isn't it true also that, in a manner of speaking, if we actually looked at our lives, that we could find instances where we were actually in altered states of consciousness? Some might refer to it, especially in sports, as being in the zone.
In the zone or in the flow, right.
In the flow, where time just has absolutely no meaning whatsoever. I've done projects where I start it, I finish it, and what do you mean it's 5 hours later? You know? But you just aren't, or maybe it's less time. But nonetheless, so for people to be concerned about being in an altered state of consciousness, they shouldn't be, because they've been doing it probably all their lives at different points, and they could find those if they really looked.
Well, you're in it twice a day. Once when you first start to wake up in the morning, you're in that in between state when you're not quite. You're not quite consciously awake.
We call that groggy.
Right. Right. And same thing at night, right before you fall asleep. So that's the kind of state that's what it feels like. That's what it's like. So people shouldn't really be afraid of it, because they do it twice a day.
Wow. All right. Well, let's get back to the individual who, where do they need to be if they're curious about this? What is it that's going on inside of them that's causing them to want to go in this direction and say, you know, I need to do this because this is what's going on in my life?
Well, if you have a particular issue that you're dealing with right now, it could be a relationship issue or finance or health or career or anything, and you see a pattern, you see that it repeats itself over and over and over again, and you're wondering, why is this happening? There's no logical explanation for this happening in my life right now. You know, why do I have these feelings over and over again? You could put that out there in a form of a question and ask for guidance on that. And, simply there's a 12-step process, basically. It's the long version. And it's in both books, by the way. It's in the first book and the second book about all the steps to take to do this. But basically, I can tell you in just three easy steps. You just want to get into a really quiet place, a place where you won't be distracted, a place that you would normally go if you're going to do any kind of quiet activity. People that meditate like to usually go in a specific room and do it there. You will close your eyes, just take some deep breaths, whatever you do, whatever works for you to get you into a totally relaxed state. Try to blank everything else out of your mind. Sit there with a pen in your hand and a journal on your lap. And it could be, you don't have to spend a lot of money on fancy books or fancy pens. You can actually even do this at the keyboard. I don't recommend that, though, because with your eyes halfway closed, if you shift over and you're typing, you won't be able to read anything that you wrote. So I usually tell people, it's try to do it by hand if at all possible.
Right.
And then simply just get quiet and ask the question like you were praying. Give me some information. And it's very important always that you do protect yourself, that you say a prayer of protection. Visualize a white light surrounding you, and then, ask the question and then wait. You have to be very patient. You have to get out of the way. You have to just allow the writing to proceed. without editing it, without, don't worry about crossing your T's and dotting your I's. Just, it's a flow, it's a stream of consciousness writing. Sometimes if you start to make ovals on the paper, that starts the writing process, and out of that some words will start to form. Or some people, if you get a message in your head, go ahead and write that down, and then wait, and then the words will come after that. Some people also, if they're not visual and they're not seeing anything or hearing anything, they might want to draw a picture. I mean, it's the same process that artists use when they're going to start their, a painting or something like that. They'll just sort of put themselves in that altered state and ask for guidance so they can do their highest and best, and then it'll come to them. So basically that's it. If they would just get into a quiet place, just close their eyes, do some deep breathing, just some relaxation techniques, whatever works for them. They could put some music on in the background if they like. Make sure that they say the prayer, some sort of prayer of protection. Surround themselves with white light. Ask the question, put the pen down on the paper, and wait for the answer. It'll come.
I think that's probably going to be the hardest for a lot of us, is being patient, sitting
right,
and waiting for that to come. I also would add one thing to that, and I'm this is probably, maybe in a sense, goes without saying, and that is that you go with the first thing that comes.
Exactly.
You don't, it's like you were saying before, get out of the way. I think that's, you've described that concept of getting out of the way. Don't think about it. Try to... I've heard it phrased this way. You don't want to tell your mind to be quiet or shut up. Just, okay, I will listen to you in 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Could you just go over there, so to speak? Go over there. Don't be mean to your mind. And let me do this. And in 30 minutes, you and I, we will have the grandest time.
Right.
But right now, I need this space. I need this time to get in touch with these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody begins the process of writing, one of the things you said maybe start making ovals. I don't know why this came to mind, but growing up in broadcasting in the Christian radio station, I invariably heard from time to time what is referred to as speaking in tongues.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that it's a spiritual language. And I thought, well, but what good is the language if you can't understand what's being said?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, the same thing in the terms of beginning to write. If you are writing so that it's unintelligible, I would assume that the individual writing is going to write in such a way that it's going to be intelligible, or maybe it wasn't all that important. What are your thoughts instead of writing? And obviously this is different. In terms of speaking it, is that something that people have tried, but it seems to be more effective when you write it because you now have it sort of in a more tangible and workable, viewable format?
Well, I think in this case, if you wanted to have a recorder there and you wanted to speak it, but I that's a whole different process.
Right, that's what I kind of thought.
Than the writing, because the writing, you really can feel it coming through you. I mean, you know, this is coming up from above through you, through, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for instance, they've, you know, all sacred writings have been said to come through someone, not by someone.
Right.
So this is what you're looking for. You're looking for the guidance, and it's there for you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's what's so beautiful about this, that anytime you need guidance, and it doesn't have to be just on past lives. It could be on anything that you need. It could be on your spiritual growth. It could be on healing or psychoanalysis. Anything that you want, you can use this process. So it's there for you once you learn it. And anybody can do it. It's not something that's just limited to a few people. With practice, anyone can do it. And most people get something their first try. It does sound a little different than what you normally write. So it's not you writing in a... I'm a writer by profession, and if I'm writing a press release or a brochure or a newsletter, it sounds completely different than when I write when I'm in an altered state.
Right.
So expect some really transformational information, some very profound information to come out of this, and explanations, a new perspective that you would never have gotten while in a conscious state.
it sounds to me like these books that one might write, because if you do it long enough, you're going to fill up a book. They can become, sounds like the information there could become quite invaluable to that person. And really, it's not going to mean anything to anybody else.
Right.
In terms of, I know that, you know, everybody is so worried about security and privacy and so forth. Mm-hmm. I gave that up a long time ago because I thought, well, if God knows, what difference does it make if the other 6 or 7 billion people know? And most of them aren't even going to care.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But God knows, so what difference? So there you go. I think that when I have written in my journal, there were times when my mind would kick in. I wasn't doing the process as you have spoken of it in terms of past life types of info. But just kind of journaling the day or thoughts or what have you, sometimes my mind would go to, I wonder if I should phrase it differently in case somebody else reads it.
Right.
And again, that's part of that ego, the intellect that's trying to get in the way of the process.
Exactly.
Of just putting their feelings or whatever it is down on that paper.
Right, right. And I think that the real value of this for so many people that I was working with, when you could see the change in their life, for, you know, I had one who had a spontaneous healing. He had asthma in this lifetime and went back to a life actually in Pompeii, which he suffocated in the caves. So here we are 2,000 years later, and he's relaying this information. And in the regression, he doesn't say anything about having asthma in this life. And then actually when he starts to do the writing, the writing said asthma from the seared lungs, ? And after that session, of course, there are a lot of patterns between the two lifetimes, and I know we don't have time to get into all that, but the asthma disappeared after that.
Wow.
So that was the first case of spontaneous healing that I had ever encountered in my work, but it was very, very powerful. Because in this lifetime, he's doing basically the same work that he was doing in the previous life, and the asthma was the trigger to remind him, don't make the same mistake you made before. But we didn't get that until we actually went through the writing process, and he got that. And I have that's really what I think is the most interesting aspect of that book. Yeah, their past lives are interesting. You read it, and, oh, wow, that was really kind of cool what happened to that person. But when you read their writing, because the book includes not only the transcript of their regression, but it also includes their soul writing. So while they were doing the writing, I was also writing at the same time. I was asking my source, is there any additional information you can give me to help so-and-so, you know, understand better what that past life was all about? I got that information as well, and then we read it to each other, and that's when all these incredible aha moments happen. So all of that is included in the book, so you could see you could see what the past life was, you could see what their writing was, and then you could see what my writing was and how it kind of came in and augmented what they had, and then how we pulled all that together and drew the correlation between the two lifetimes. So Spirit took my project to a whole different level, because I wasn't expecting half of what happened, to be honest with you.
I do think that is one of the aspects of all of this, in terms of going into it, that we need to be of that mindset, and that in that we need to go into it without expectation. I think that's what creates a lot of the anxiety and even the fear, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
We go into it with a certain expectation that this is the way it's going to be, and it is in that way, and we're going, well, why not?
Right.
Well, because it was never going to be the way you thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've often taken trips. I remember the first trip that my wife and I took to Ireland. And normally, when we take a trip, even a drive up north to, say, Sedona, when we lived in Phoenix, or out here, we will go up and we went to Cambria, or we'll go down to a place down near Los Angeles or what have you. You know, I mean, there's a certain element of planning it out. I didn't have a chance because it was right before our wedding. And so I didn't have a chance to do all of that legwork online, even though back in 2003 or 2002, you know, it wasn't quite as sophisticated as it is today with, you know, the map apps and all those kinds of things. And so when we got there, we were literally flying by the seat of our pants. And the way that it unfolded was just, I have to say, quite miraculous. And there really weren't any expectations, because by the time we got there, because I hadn't been able to do any of that advanced planning, you know, I was like, I don't know where. And I even got homesick. I mean, it was unbelievable. Didn't plan on that. So I think that when you're talking about wanting to get in touch with these kinds of things, it's extremely important to not have expectations in terms of where this is all going to go. I want you to give us one more time, if you would, your web address so people can get in touch with you. I have one here that is soulwriter.net.
That's right. And they can reach me if they want to email me, joanne@soulwriter.net, J-O-A-N-N-E. And I'm happy to respond to any of your listeners' questions.
And, of course, your first book was Soul Writing, conversing with your higher self. We've had conversations about that over the years on this program as far as higher self and what that is. And, of course, I get into conversation about the aspects of free will and these kinds of things. And choice, predestination, in terms of listening to that higher self. Because my understanding is the higher self, that still small voice, because it's, I think, the same thing. It's all connected. Your higher voice, your still small voice or higher self is connected to mine and everybody else's, even though you and I may not be. And so at that level, the information and instruction and guidance that you're given, it's not going to be the same for me, but it's this is the way I phrase this. It's coincidental. And so it's working towards the bigger picture.
Exactly.
And someone said, well, yeah, but where's the individuality? Where did you see the individuality disappear? I'm still doing my thing, but my thing is a part of the whole.
Right.
And I've chosen that. So when somebody has these past lives that they're looking at, how does, this is kind of a weird sort of question, but how does that all go into the mix?
Well, you know, one of the things that we discovered when we did this whole session is that we're all one, that we're never alone, and that we always have guidance available to us. And the past lives, you know, you've had so many of them, but you're not working on all of them at one time. So the information is out there. It's in the Akashic Records. You can tap into it any time that you want. We're on a journey. Each of us individually is on a journey. Our souls are on a journey, but they're on the same journey. The journey is to get back to where we came from. And we decided to come to the Earth School to experience what it's like in the physical form. And you can't possibly experience everything of what it is to be a human being in one lifetime. There's just no way to do it. And so we accomplish a few things in one lifetime, pass on, we leave our vehicle behind, our bodies, our souls go back, review what's happened in the previous life and decide, okay, the next time I come to the Earth, I'm going to work on this, and then the time after that on this, and then and so on and so forth. And as my research showed, people don't necessarily work on something that happened in the immediate previous lifetime. It may have happened, like in the case of the Pompeii, a lifetime, you know, 2,000 years earlier. So there's that continuum, and we can tap into it at any time. But we're all on the same journey. It's all, and it's not just always straight up. Sometimes you go down, like Casey would sometimes say, that soul gained or that soul lost. But as he said too, there's a reading from Casey in which he said there was as much reason to dwell upon the thought from whence the soul came as it is upon whence the soul goeth. And so that's really what the value of past life work is.
How did you go about choosing the people to participate? Sounds to me like there might have been some kind of a questionnaire of sorts.
Well, I head up the Edgar Casey's ARE in Charlottesville, so I had a fairly large database of like-minded people, and I'm also a part of Unity Church, and so I sort of put the word out, you know, would you like to participate in a research project? And of the 50 that I had, 43 were women and 7 were men, and they ranged in age from 23 to 81. It was quite remarkable. And they were all, a lot of them were professional people. I had a psychologist. I had marketing professionals, IT professionals, nurses. It was an incredible group of people. And, you know, and out of that 50, 25 are in the book, by the way. But out of that 50, like 17 had never had a regression before. And 21 had never been in an altered state of consciousness. Yet when the whole thing, when all was said and done, 88% said that that session impacted their life in some way. And another 78% made the connection between their past life and their current life. So to me, that those were really valuable statistics in terms of the value of a project like this. So so I did not have any trouble finding people. They were free regression, people were more than happy.
Ready, willing, and able.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, now, I would take it that you have been through these kinds of regressions yourself.
Absolutely. Oh, yes, I have.
And when you first decided to allow yourself to be regressed, what were your thoughts prior to and following the regression, and how did that information impact you?
I think mostly it was disbelief, just like anybody else. I first got involved with this professionally around 1987, right after Shirley MacLaine came out with Out on a Limb. But before that, as a child, I had had some inkling of a previous lifetime in the 18th century America. And as I say in the book, you know, the writing came through when I was 9 years old. It started to happen. And then again, when I was in college and I majored in history. And I had a lot of clues coming up through life, and I think a lot of people have that, but they dismiss it. They don't pay attention to it, especially when you're a child. There's a lot of bleed through that, and you could. It's like being a detective. You could just take bits and pieces and put it together to create this this great mosaic of a previous lifetime. So I was involved with it for quite a while before I actually had my first regression, and even then, it was difficult for me to accept what I was seeing and what I was experiencing. But after that started, because I started getting answers to some really difficult questions about what was going on in my life, I wanted to find out more. I wanted to get the complete picture. And so I pursued that for quite a while. I even started a past life organization in which I was bringing in different authors and speakers who are at the leading edge of regression therapy. I joined an association in California that's for the International Association for Regression Therapists. So I was surrounding myself with professionals, with people that I really trusted and people who had been working in this field for many, many years. And I was very fortunate that I could work with some of them one-on-one and doing regressions with me. And I had one who said to me, he said, "Joanne, you know more about past life therapy than about 90% of the therapists out there. Why aren't you doing it?" And I wanted to write about it. I wanted to take case histories, look at what people were going through and what the end result was, and then putting that information out through written material. And then I realized that I could do my own research with my own clients, and so I did get that education to be able to do that, and I got my master's degree through Atlantic University in transpersonal studies, and just spent a lot of time reading the Casey material and all the other material that was out there so that I could provide this service to other people and continue to do the research that I think is needed to address some of the questions that the skeptics ask. So that's sort of been my journey through this lifetime, and probably in other ones too.
Yeah, I've probably read most of the Casey writings, the books that are out. And then there was another gal I remember in concert with that. I want to say she may be on a little different tangent now that I think about it. I'm thinking of Ruth Montgomery.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't heard anything from her in quite a long time, but nonetheless, for some reason I was reading. We were reading those at the same time or very close, and for some reason there's a connection there. But what I'm also getting from you too is that when you do these past life regressions, it isn't so much. As a matter of fact, you probably are trying to distance yourself from the persona of that past life,
mm-hmm.
and more tapping into the events that took place that shaped the personality, the character, the behavior, etc., that is part of who you are today.
Exactly. And that's what most people do. I mean, I had a number of people who were healers in previous lifetimes who saw themselves, mixing herbs and assisting people. And, of course, they were living in a whole different time period, and a lot of them were persecuted. And now they're healers again in this lifetime, and they're very timid about sharing their gifts because, they have got this karmic memory of having paid a very high price for having shared those gifts with people. So when they see that that's where that's coming from, it dissipates and they're able to move forward. And there were people who had sessions where they saw a loved one, someone that they very, very dearly were in love with, and find out that they're in this lifetime with them again. And I had one woman, the oldest of my group was that 81-year-old woman who was trying to be a writer in her previous lifetime. She lived in England in the mid-1800s and found out that she had been married to a man who beat her because he didn't want her to be writing about the things she was writing about. Now she's in this lifetime, 81 years old, finds out that her husband in that life was her husband in this life, and he didn't beat her in this life, but he very much discouraged her for writing. Now he has passed on, and now at the ripe old age of 81, she has been a very prolific writer. She's writing one novel after the other. So it's just, like I said, the correlation between the two, finding out the root cause of some of the issues and then seeing how it's impacting you now and moving past that is the most rewarding part of this project, because everybody who left the session in a much better place than when they came in.
Well, it's extraordinary work. I kind of wish I was living back there in the sense that this would be interesting to be a part of and to learn a little bit more about my inner workings, aside from just saying that I'm crazy. But again, we're all a little crazy in this particular business. It's hard not to be sometimes. This is, to me, it's extraordinary. It's fascinating. It's thought-provoking, to say the very least. And I know that somewhere down the road here, I may very well go out and just because I like the aspect of sort of ritual and ceremony of going out and searching for a book, a blank book that looks the way that I want it to. And certainly I'm not going to belabor the point, but I know that it will be drawn to me and I'll find it and I'll buy it. And I will take it into whatever the secret place is or quiet place is that I will find. And I love fountain pens myself.
Me too.
I have one, but I need to find a new cartridge because I've used up all the ink. Speaking of losing ink, needing more ink. And there's just something about writing with a fountain pen that is, to me, is I don't know, it just feels different than a ballpoint pen or a pencil or something like that.
It does, and I think that one of the sad things that's happening now is that cursive writing is being phased out of many of our schools.
Isn't that interesting?
And my daughter's a fourth grade teacher, and she's mom. I'm trying to continue to teach it as long as I possibly can. And I said that I think is one of the biggest mistakes that the school system is making. There is a lot to be said about being able to write by hand, but you know, we're living in a different age right now, and the kids, I guess, think that there's no need for it. But I think that later on in life, maybe they'll come to see the value of it. Because it is different. It is completely different when you write by hand than when you do it on a keyboard, especially with this kind of writing.
And I am almost certain that there is something different going on amongst the brain cells and synapses and all of that happens when you do write longhand, I think is what it's also referred to as, as opposed to hitting your thumbs on your little keyboard on your phone or the keys on your keyboard in front of your computer that are not there.
Right.
And it's almost like you're sort of imprinting or it's becoming more ingrained in you. I know that I've thought about, you know, getting one of these voice-activated speech programs that I can record my stories into that are running around in my head, and it would just be quicker. But this is something different. This is a different process and for a different purpose and if you will, goal, in a manner of speaking. I would venture to, Joanne, that this kind of thing is an ongoing process.
Absolutely.
This is not something that you're just going to do once and then, I'll never do this again.
No, the more you do it, actually, the better you get at it, and it becomes a companion for you, because that's one of the things people commented on, that they no longer felt that they were alone, you know, that there was always someone who was listening and there to answer them. So it was, I think that was one of the comments that most of the people made that surprised them, but that they walked away from with the greatest joy in their hearts to know that, you know, I'm not alone. There's always someone out there listening. And like I said, whether you believe it's your guardian angel that you're in touch with, or whether you believe it's God, or whether you believe it's your higher self, or spirit guide, it doesn't matter. It's just that I do believe that each of us came into this life with that ability. It's our birthright to communicate with our source, but just so few people take advantage of that or know that. And all the answers are within, really, and that's what this is all about, is tapping into that.
Well, our institutions down through the centuries have done a number on us in that regard.
Exactly.
They've told us that the answers are without. They have them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm seeing right now in our present day, both many of our institutions, they don't have any answers because they can't seem to solve the very small little problems that they're dealing with right in front of them that are so simple. I mean, most of us can see the solution. Mm-hmm. It's just unbelievable. And it's like, But people are more interested in ego and preserving turf and all those kinds of things than really solving problems and dealing with the challenges before us. And it's that mentality, and it kind of goes back to that phrase I've quoted many times on this program from Einstein, who said that we cannot solve the problems of today with the consciousness that created them.
Mm-hmm.
We have to go higher.
Right.
And I remember... What was it? There was a situation where the president was faced with an issue. It was dealing with the situation overseas and wanting to send a military message. And apparently, it's been so long now, I have a funny feeling like that the meaning would be completely lost on those on the receiving end.
Mm-hmm.
But that the message was getting through that this is not the way to do this. What this individual and his people did was atrocious. It was awful. It was wrong. But that doesn't justify a similar action because it doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
We have to find other ways of solving these problems. So we have to think, we have to go higher. We have to sit down and pause, take a breath, and say, how do we resolve these things without creating more damage? And I think that in our own lives, going through this process that you've provided, I think it's a very valuable tool, and I think it's one people should look into. Your soul remembers accessing your past lives through soul writing. I want to remind you that Joanne DiMaggio is my guest, and her website, which I had there a moment ago, soulwriting.net.
Soulwriter.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's to the person, soulwriter.net.
Right.
And we encourage you to check that out. We encourage you to check out the book. And we encourage you to maybe jump into the process and just see where it leads you and see what you find. And do it on a regular basis. You know, we have various significant days throughout the year that we spend time dealing with, whether they be New Year's or the 4th of July or Thanksgiving and Christmas or whatever other holidays that you might celebrate. And I'm getting the sense from a lot of people too, Joanne, that many people are starting to drift away from them. I mean, there are many, many people, and you can see the dollar signs rolling, who are still very much a part of it. But there are a lot of other people who are saying, I don't want to do that anymore. It's a waste of money for one, and it doesn't have any meaning. What I want to do is I want to do this thing here, and that has meaning for me.
Right, right. I'm one of them.
Well, and so am I. And I try to I think about that in the context of remembering souls past. Who were with us at one point, who are close to us, and just, you know, we may not do anything really spectacular and special other than just to remember them even throughout the year. But then on that one day that, you know, was significant for us, it comes flooding back and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And we called some dear friends of ours back in Phoenix the other evening and chatted with the husband for, I don't know, 15, 20, 25 minutes. And after the call was over, you know, we were in tears over the fact that we hadn't seen them in so long, but at least we were able to communicate with them.
Right.
But they were still there, and they were still doing fairly well. But it just seems as though so many people are almost caught up or caught in this unyielding structure, social structure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that maybe when we start to take a look at what you're offering us, and that is our past lives and how we can get, I think, what did I phrase at the beginning of the program, unstuck?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think then we can make a change.
Right, and I think the soul writing portion of it really slows you down. Slows down your thoughts, slows down your life, and you make a commitment to take that time every day. Just keep that appointment with yourself every day. It's well worth the time. You'll get some tremendous insights that you normally wouldn't have, and it will really propel you forward and give you strength and encouragement and empowerment and certainly inspiration.
I don't know that I asked you these questions the last time you were on the program, so I'll ask you now.
Okay.
Who is Joanne DiMaggio?
Who is Joanne DiMaggio? That's
no, that's my question.
I know. Well, she is someone who wants to inspire and empower through the written word.
What do you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I want to share the wisdom of so many who have gone before me, to find a way, to share a way with people to be in touch with the divine and to obtain guidance in their life and to know that there is always someone there listening and available to them to give them insights and a new perspective so that they can resolve the issues that they're dealing with today and move forward.
And how powerful are we as human beings?
We are infinitesimally powerful. We have the ability to do so much more than we have ever considered being able to do. It's our birthright, but we need to focus on the right thing and the profound connection that we have with the universe, and tap into that, tap into the creative forces, and be able to expand ourselves so that we can accomplish great things.
I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program today and sharing your story and your book and the work that you're doing. And it kind of brings back some very fond memories of spending time reading those books of Edgar Cayce's and hearing his story and those of others as well. And so, again, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me, Richard. I enjoyed it.
And that website, again, is soulwriter.net, soulwriter.net. People can get a hold of you through that email address at that website, and we encourage you to do just that. The title of the book, once again, Your Soul Remembers, Accessing Your Past Lives Through Soul Writing. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.